right. If you guys want to turn to Nehemiah chapter 4, we will get there in just a moment. We talked about Nehemiah chapter 4 on Wednesday nights, and so I know where we've been because I was the one that was there leading you to this moment. But I wanted to share with you some thoughts, very similar thoughts, but in a different, maybe a different perspective. How many of you guys believe in Murphy's Law? Murphy's Law. I totally believe in Murphy's Law. In fact, I believe it's accurate. I believe it's truthful. I believe it's God ordained. You can find it in Leviticus chapter 28 through 30, the lost books of Leviticus, if you don't know anything about that. So you can look that up later, Leviticus 28 through 30. Murphy's Law. Experienced Murphy's Law yesterday at Joy Gatt's house. Absolutely the way Murphy's Law works. Because Murphy's Law is very simple, right? If anything can go wrong, it usually will. So we're putting in new curbing, so to speak, edging, metal edging around her front garden area. And every time we wanted to, not every time, but almost every time we wanted to put a stake in the ground, guess what? Root right there, growing right there. And the biggest root that we could possibly have found was right where we needed to tie in two of them together. And I think I said it three times yesterday. That's Murphy's Law. Murphy's Law is things like this. When you drop a part, it always rolls into the darkest corner. It always falls into a crack where you can't find it. It always finds a way to disappear. I was working on my saw the other day. Well, it's been a month ago or so. And I was changing the blade out. And I knew there was a little bolt. And it just flat disappeared. And I told Karen, I said, I'm going to go crazy. This is Murphy's Law. And what had happened is when I took the other blade off, the part, which, I mean, it's just like two pieces of metal, I guess, from years of grease and everything else, stuck to that. And so when I laid the blade down, it was on the other side laying on that. And I could, so mad. And it took me a while to finally, and I was, whatever. Okay, I'll read this one slow. Anytime you have a 50-50 chance of getting something right, Murphy's Law, anytime you have a 50-50 chance of getting something right, you have a 90% chance of getting it wrong. That's the way that works. A shin bone is a device for finding furniture in the dark. That's what shin bones are for. After your hands are covered in paint, grease, or oil, you will inevitably get an itch on your ear, your nose, or have to go to the restroom. That is pretty much Murphy's Law. And you haven't had to go any time up to that point in time. When you take your car, I practiced this week, and Kelly's not here, because he's always making fun of how I make sound effects. But when you take your car to the mechanic to hear the sound it's been making, you know, that sound, or that little sound, whatever that, you get to the mechanic, and it does not do it. That's Murphy's Law. It's like, well, it's been making this sound. Right? The probability of meeting someone you know increases dramatically when you've just rolled out of bed, when you didn't do your hair, when you put a hat on, when you have stuff in your teeth. Well, you will meet somebody. Ladies say that all the time. I'm going to go out of the house without makeup. I haven't done my hair. I'm going to wear my you know, elephant slippers. I mean, I know Landon wears his elephant slippers every once in a while because I saw him a couple times wearing those. But he, you don't remember those? And so, but the probability of meeting someone you know when you look the worst. And this is my favorite. If you're traveling on a two-lane road, 1,000 miles in one direction, and there's one-lane bridge, and there's one other car coming in the opposite direction, you will meet on the one-lane bridge. You ever notice that? Or if Karen thinks I'm weird, it happens all the time. We come to a four-way stop sign. There's no cars behind me for 3 miles. There's no cars in front of me for 3 miles or to the left or the right. But there's one car that will all meet at the exact same moment. I told Karen one morning, and she said, you're so weird. And I went, what? And we all went, what? And everybody looked at each other like, that can't happen. It's Murphy's Law. It's just Murphy's Law. At any event, it happened at the concert. At any event, the people whose seats are furthest from the aisle are the last ones to show up. The first people that showed up sat on the end. We had the end. And the next people, all excuses, pardons, oh, we're so sorry. And then the last ones to show up were like 15 minutes late. And I just want to kick them and go, Murphy's Law. You know, but I didn't. And then the last but not least, the line Doesn't matter, but the line, there's two lines, three lines, four lines, five lines, right? Doesn't matter. The line that you choose will always be the slowest. Now, at the concert, we got a really fast line until somebody went, you know, they scanned them and it went beep, 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 beep. And I was like, here we go. And we did, stood there for, you know, this line. I was counting people in like nine people because I knew I was doing this lesson on Murphy's Law. It is what it is. Let me tell you something. In Nehemiah chapter 4, you get to a point where Nehemiah knew Murphy. I mean, that's how old the law went. And he turns around. Of course, his name there was Murphyius or wherever. It would have been different. But he's like, will you just go away? Because if it could go wrong, it did. But it waited a little while. Murphy's Law doesn't show up in Nehemiah chapter 4 until they get about halfway along. Or at least we don't read about it. But when we start reading about it, it seems like things just keep going wrong for Nehemiah, and things just don't seem to be working out the way they need to. And we all experience that. The first question I asked Wednesday night in teaching Bible class was, have you ever been discouraged? And I had several people go, yeah. I mean, have we not all been discouraged? Have we not all had things happen to us, right? Even this week or this month or this year or whenever it is, and we get discouraged. The key is coming out of that discouragement, coming away from those negativities, coming away from the problems, and finding a way, finding a formula to be encouraged instead of being discouraged. So it seems like for Nehemiah, he is a good cheerleader. I'm excited to read about Nehemiah, but I'm more excited to meet him someday. When we get to heaven, I want to meet the guy. I want to see what made him tick. He finds encouragement. He finds ways to encourage the people and cheerlead them on to doing bigger and better things. The wall around Jerusalem is important, right? We have a slide. I showed a bunch of slides. That was a big undertaking, was it not? I mean, we think about this and we say, well, yeah, they're rebuilding the walls of Jerusalem. No big deal. Big deal. 2.5 miles of walls, 40 feet tall, 9 feet thick, and you get 52 days to put that together. I mean, as Deanne and I were talking about Wednesday night, you don't do that by yourself. God was very much involved in helping them do this incredible work. But what does it relate to? So you're in your house. Micah, you're at your house, and somebody runs stop sign. Well, you don't have a stop sign. Rolls through your front door, and you bring somebody in and says, hey, I need to get my front door fixed. And the guy comes, he shows up, and he says, okay, I can fix your front door. Take me 4 days, but I got to take it with me. And so you're like, oh, okay. So you have no front door. No big deal, right? I mean, the animals can come in. The neighbors can come in. You know, Jehovah's Witness can come in. I mean, no door. Hey, can we just come? And I jokingly say that. But we would post a guard, would we not? Would we not have someone sitting, you know, it's like, okay, Karen, you take the 20 gauge for the first 3 hours or board it up, do something. That's what, I mean, it's not quite the same, but to have no front door means no protection, no security, no feeling of ease. We don't have anybody that's going to take care of us, or we don't feel like we have anything that's going to take care of us. And so it's nerve-wracking for the people to not have a wall, to keep the marauders out, to keep the neighbors out. Well, maybe not the neighbors, the bad neighbors out, the enemies of Israel. So it's important for us to pay attention to that. When things go wrong. When things go wrong, not if, but when things go wrong, how do we handle it? How do we find some encouragement? Three things. I talked about this Wednesday night. There's 3 points to remind you. Discouragement has 3 facets. And oh, I think there's sheets back there if you wanted to do notes. I should have passed those out this week. It took me forever to actually print those this week. The printer was acting up and kept eating them. So, but anyway, if you want notes, note cards, they're back there. Raise your hand and somebody will bring them to you. Look at, there's God, what a guy. So if you need those. But there's three facets. Discouragement has 3, of course, the front row. Those are them, yeah. The one, I think, does it have a picture of the Golden Gate Bridge? Perfect. Thank you, Scott. Discouragement has 3 facets. I'll talk a little bit slower so you can fill in your blanks. Number 1, it's universal. It's universal. We talked about this Wednesday night. It's universal. You don't escape discouragement. It's going to happen to you. Everyone experiences discouragement at one point in time in their life. No one is immune. Number two, it's recurring. The same things can keep happening. We mentioned this on Wednesday night as well. Sometimes something will happen to you and it doesn't bother you a bit. And then the next time it doesn't bother you. But the third time, it may be that there's a change of situation. Maybe you haven't had as much sleep. Maybe there's been a lot of other things happening and it just keeps piling on. And you're like, I am so discouraged right now because these things are recurring. And then number three, it's contagious. It's contagious. We tend to be discouraged when others are discouraged. And there's times when we can be discouraged and discourage others. But that flip-flops. So that means that I can also encourage. Encouragement is contagious. And encouragement is definitely something that you need when you're doing team events and you're working together and you're encouraging one another. I cannot imagine what it felt like for a number 16 seed, 135-0, number one seeds versus number 16 seeds in the NCAA tournament. And I don't know if you heard a couple of days ago, but a number 16 seed beat a number one seed for the first, not just a number one seed, the number one seed. They were the highest ranked team in the entire tournament. You don't do that by yourself. I mean, it starts slow and then you just build it up. There's some great encouragement that takes place and it's contagious. But the same is said for the other way. You can see the heads bowing and the arms crossing and the shaking of the heads as things start going in a negative direction. So let's read. We're going to read Nehemiah 4:6, kind of get our minds around this encouraging facet of what takes place here in chapter 4. This is amazing to me. So verse 6 says, "We rebuilt the wall till all of it reached half its height, for the people worked with all of their heart." So they're halfway through. I want you to realize they're halfway through when Murphy's Law kind of starts showing up. Halfway, 20 feet, right? We showed that picture. 20 feet, big rocks, big stones, built well. They're working with all their heart. Things are going quite well. But when God's at work, our enemies are at work too. You ever noticed? When things start really going well, there are tendencies that the enemies of God start showing up, or the enemies of ourselves start showing up, negativity and criticism, things like that. Sanballat, everybody boo. Give me a good boo. Right, Sanballat, the enemy. Audience participation this morning. Sanballat continues to ridicule. Look at verse 1. I know I started with 6, but I wanted to lead up to that. When Sanballat heard they were rebuilding the wall, he became angry and was incensed. And he ridiculed the Jews. He's mad because Sanballat's a Horonite. You've got Tobiah, an Ammonite, and this guy who is a Horonite. I mentioned this Wednesday night. But when they got into the promised land, these were the enemies that God said, get out. You get them people out of there because they're going to cause problems for you. That's why he's angry. That's why he's incensed. And that's why he's making fun of them. He's the enemy. We need to get that clearly in our head that he's the enemy. And of course, he's not going to be encouraging. He's going to be discouraging. He's going to say what he can say to discourage the people. That's what our enemies do. And sometimes our enemies show up as nice people, but they're really the enemies of God. It happens where they want to discourage. They don't want you to succeed. There's even times when good-meaning Christian folks discourage. We've all experienced that, too. And it's tough to overcome discouragement. So Tobiah, everyone boo again. Another enemy. He's making fun of them, right? Verse 3, Tobiah the Ammonite, who was at his side, said, "What are they building? Even a fox climbing on it would break down their wall of stones." A slide, again. Is a fox going to break that down? I don't think so. Is that not an empty threat? That one of the most empty threats ever? I think it's interesting that he would say it. And Hunter's already laughing because he knows I'm. You know, they would come. The kids would come home and they would say, "So-and-so's making fun of me. They said blah, blah, blah." And I'm like, "Are you?" "He said I was the slowest player on the team." Like, "Are you the slowest player on the team?" "No." "Then why are you upset?" "Well, because he said it." It's a lie. It's a deception. It doesn't matter. We believe stuff like that all the time. You know, is it true? No. Then why are you upset if it's not true? Well, it hurt my feelings. Well, then get over it. Get over it. Because it's not true, and it's not true that a fox is going to climb on the wall and break it down. He's just using ridicule, trying to hurt their hearts. Skip down to verses 8 and 9. But when Sanballat, boo, Tobiah, boo, the Arabs, boo, the Ammonites, the people of Ashdod, heard that the repairs to Jerusalem's walls had gone ahead and the gaps were being closed, they were angry. They're upset that Israel is accomplishing a goal, is doing something in the name of God. They all plotted together to come and fight against Jerusalem and to stir up trouble against it. All I can think of when I think of stirring up trouble is a witch sitting there going, you know, stirring up a pot of stuff. I mean, what is a hocus pocus where they're, you know, the evil little laugh or whatever. You've got these images in your mind, whatever they may be, but they're plotting, they're strategizing, they're not happy, they're discouragers. That's what they are going to do because they are the enemies. So they come up with a couple of strategies, ridicule and opposition. Ridicule and opposition. Ridicule is the language of Satan. His native language, according to John chapter 8, is lying. That's his native language. He just lies. Ridicule is a form of a lie. It's to make you believe something that's not true. If you'll just stop and reevaluate what's being said, there are times when you will see right through the lie. But in times of discouragement, sometimes we're too busy focusing on other things. And that's where the discouragement comes into play. Again, we said that a while ago. It's recurring. What may get you one time won't get you the next time. And so we need to stop and think about it for just a minute. Do you remember when David went out to fight Goliath? If you remember, David goes out to fight Goliath with a slingshot. And Goliath, when he gets close enough to see David, starts ridiculing, making fun of David. He says, "Am I a dog that you come at me with sticks?" The Philistine cursed David by his gods. "Come here," he said, "and I'll give your flesh to the birds and the wild animals." David was never discouraged. David didn't even bother him a bit. He's like, "You're nothing. Am I a dog you come at me? Who are you? You're not even. You don't even have armor on. You're not even a warrior. You're just a teenage kid with a slingshot." And David is not going to face the ridicule. He says, basically, "Who are you to stand in front and say something to my God? My God's taking care of me all the way through. There's nothing you can say that's going to make me feel better or feel worse about what I'm doing here today because my God is on my side." And he says, you know, I think he hooks his thumb over to the ones listening on the not only the Philistine side in front of him, but the Israelite side and says, "And I'm going to let everybody that's here know and see what faith will do and what my God can accomplish." See, Nehemiah had that kind of faith. You remember when Jesus is on the cross, he was ridiculed and made fun of by the guards. But like David, he's not discouraged. He's not going to be discouraged because he knows where he came from. He knows where he's at and he knows where he's going. He's got God on his side in all three facets, in the past, in the present, and will in the future. So that trumps most discouragement. So Nehemiah is doing that exact same thing. He's reminding them of the same reality. He's reminding them and telling them over and over again, you have God on your side. We have God on our side. Do not be discouraged by words that are untrue and by taunts and ridicules and silliness is what's taking place. So, I mean, to me, that's just crazy. A fox on it would break it down. But again, they're tired and they're weak. They're halfway through, which means they've done a lot, but they have a lot more left to do. So number one, ridicule and opposition is the other. Opposition. What do I mean? Everyone is against me. Everyone is telling this story. Everyone at school hates me. Everyone at work wishes I would fail. Everyone. If I had a dollar for every teenager that I counseled in my lifetime, probably adults as well, who use the word everyone, I would be a wealthy guy. Because we'll go and we'll say that. We'll say, well, everyone's against me. Everyone is this. And everyone. I usually take a piece of paper down and I'll start numbering it down to about 20. And they're like, what? And I go, well, I'm just making enough room here. Okay, now, tell me, Morgan, who is against you? Who is it? Well, I'm just going to make names up. Sheila said that. Janie said that. two people? So everyone is against you. But see, that's exactly the mentality that went back. Go back to Nehemiah's day. Everyone is going to attack us. Everyone is going to kill us. Everyone is against us. No one wants us to win. All of our enemies are here. They're going to attack at any moment. Post guards, get ready. And they're breathing and thinking. And Nehemiah's like, time out. Let's remind ourselves for just a second of who is on our side and who isn't. There are enemies, yes. And we'll post guards for those. But we need to keep working. We just keep doing our job. Because God is going to take care of us, and God does. The principle is there. I mentioned this. The greatest strategy in a battle is the appearance of strength. The greatest strategy in a battle is the appearance. We talked about movies where they put soldiers up on the wall that are already dead. Just put the dead soldiers up there, put broom handles, sticks, whatever. From a distance, they won't know. They'll think that we're stronger than we are. We want to make it look like we're more powerful. When we come out, bring all the big guys out first. Don't bring out the kicker in football because they're not going to be intimidated by that guy. So bring, unless it's Janikowski. He's a pretty good guy. And so you come out and you show a force. Well, that's exactly what they're doing. Look at verses 11 through 15. I think I put 14 on that. I got it right that time. It says this, also our enemy says, before they know it or see us, we'll be right there among them and we'll kill them and we'll put an end to the work. Here, we're gonna get you. Here we're coming for you. Our enemies are right there. Then the Jews who lived near them came and told us 10 times over, wherever you turn, they will attack us. The message, Peterson says, if I heard it once, I've heard it 10 times. Over and over and over, we're coming to get you, 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 we're coming to attack you. You better look out. Here we come. Here we come. I'm going to hit you. I'm coming after you. After a while, you just kind of go, okay, go ahead and swing. I'm ready for it. Empty threats. Therefore, there's a therefore, though, I stationed some of the people behind the lowest points of the wall at the exposed places, posted them by families with their swords and spears and bows. After I looked things over, I stood up and I said to the nobles, the officials, and the rest of the people, don't be afraid of them. Quit being afraid. What does he say next? Remember the Lord. See, we let the vision of the enemy thwart our faith in our God. Sometimes our focus just gets diverted to the things or the people who are enemies, and we start focusing on that, and God goes, look, turn back and look at me. Remember the Lord, who's great and awesome. And fight for your families. That's, I think, I said that Wednesday. I think that's why they're on the wall. Your sons, your daughters, your wives, your homes. He shows them, here's who you're fighting for. Don't forget, this is who you're fighting for. We've got to build the wall to protect them for years and years to come. And then verse 15, key verse. Deanna made a really good point Wednesday night, and I appreciate that. She wrote down all the way through chapter 4. So here's all the things that the people did, and here's what God did. What did God do? This right here. When our enemies heard that we were aware of their plot and that God had frustrated it, we all returned to the wall, each to his own work. God's still working. I mean, he didn't show up with some massive angelic army to defeat the enemy. Number one, he didn't have to. You know why? They never attacked. Not one time. All the threats. All the we're gonna make fun of you, we're gonna do all these things. Not one time did they ever show up and do anything about it. So they're fearing nothing. They're fearing the threat of something happening. Sometimes we do that ourselves. What if? What if? What if? And we live our lives like that. And it's better to just say, you know what? The Lord's with me. And who knows what God's doing to frustrate the plans of the enemy. He's behind the scenes doing his thing. And he always says he'll be there for us. And there's many occasions in Scripture where God is doing what God is doing. And the people don't realize it until they kind of show up and go, oh, where did they go? What happened there? And how did, I mean, Gideon, read that story. The Midianites and the Amalekites actually kill each other just because they show up with some torches and some trumpets. What a great battle plan. I got 300 guys. Let's surround them, blow some trumpets, and smash our jars and go, woo! And a million people die. It's a great, great strategy. God made it work. God made it happen. The way it is when God is working behind the scenes. They were discouraged by fear. Found a really interesting survey. I love Did You Knows. I don't know if you like did you know, but did you know 60% of our fears are totally unfounded? 60%. Totally unfounded. There's no reason to have the fear whatsoever. 60%. 20% are already behind us. They're over and done with. And we're looking back saying, well, this is what happened before, and this is what could happen. And you remember when this? And so we're looking over our shoulders instead of looking ahead. So 80%. 10% are so small they don't even matter. So 90% don't really matter. 5% are real. But there's nothing we can do about them. 5%. 5% are real, and there's something we can do about them. So out of all of our fears, one out of 10 are real. And out of those 1 out of 10, half of those we can do something about. So we fear and we worry and we get frustrated and we get discouraged over things that really don't matter or aren't even real. I always go back to Scooby-Doo. Love Scooby-Doo. You know, run away. You know, they get all nervous and run. And then at the end, there's always a mask. Yeah, it's Mr. Winkle. You know, there's always a mask. It's never a ghoul. It's never a ghost. It's never a witch. It's never a goblin. It's never of anything of any sort other than a human being with a mask. And to me, that's Satan. He just has to be a deceiver. I'll look like something I'm not. I'll even disguise myself as an angel of light, according to Scripture. But there's no founding for the fear because God has already overcome. And Christ has already taken care of that. What can we do to beat discouragement? What's our safety net? We need a safety net when we're discouraged. 4 things. Number one, get help. Post a guard, Kelly's terminology. Be encouraged. It's where we do life together. Cameron said just a little while. It's where we do life together. So ask for help. Be here to be encouraged. When you're discouraged, people say, oh, I just didn't feel like going to church. I was so discouraged. Of all the times to be discouraged, come to congregation of people who are going to encourage you. The word encourage means to bring alongside, right? To bring someone alongside of me for help when I'm discouraged. Encouragement comes. Number 2, talk to God. When somebody talks about you, don't talk back. Talk to God and let him know what's going on. I'm sure he knows, but it just makes us feel better when we prayerfully talk to God and ask him, as Nehemiah said, hey, you're aware of their plots and their schemes. Help me to strengthen my hands. Let me keep doing what I need to do. Number 3, resist the urge to be afraid, because 95% of those fears aren't even real. They're not things that you can deal with, that you can change, that anything. So you're wasting a lot of energy and discouragement on fears that aren't likely to happen. And then number 4, don't forget who's on your side. Don't forget who's on your side. God has made promises to his people. He is faithful. He is here with us. He is going to help us through, but so are lots of these folks here, right? This is our encouragement. Let us encourage one another as you see the day approaching. It's important as you see the day approaching to be encouraging. At the time it was completed in 1937, the Golden Gate Bridge was the longest suspension bridge of its day. As they got halfway through, kind of sounds like a familiar story, they got about halfway through, phase one was done, and there was a lot of discouragement because a lot of people had fallen off the bridge and died. And so the work had started slowing down, and so they stopped, they called a timeout, and they said, okay, out of all of these fears, let's figure out the one that's the most real. And so they built the largest safety net ever built up to its time. Put a safety net underneath. And so, well, was it worth it? Well, ask the 19 guys who fell and lived. They thought it was worth it. Now, there was an accident after the safety net. Some scaffolding fell, and it broke through the net, and it still killed some people. But overall, when they put the net up and they had the safety net there, people worked faster. They're just going 100 miles an hour. And they finished the bridge before they were supposed to. I almost said under schedule. Not over schedule, but under time. Because people could work faster and they felt like they weren't needing to be afraid anymore. God is aware of our ability to forget. And so he needs to be our safety net. When you're thinking, man, I don't know if I can get through this time. This is a tough time for me. Whatever it may be. I don't know if I can get through this. Well, then you need to remember to surround yourself with those who are going to encourage, and also remember that God is our safety net. And God says, you don't need to be afraid. You'll get through this. And I look, feel the hands of God reach down and says, I've got this. I've got you when you fall. I've got you when you're struggling. I've got you. Right? That's a promise from God that his hands are outstretched, that he will not let us fall. And so that, to me, is extremely encouraging. We need to be encouraged by his protection. We need to be encouraged by our friendships. And I believe that's why he created what we call the church, because it's a family of encouragers, and it's a family of those who are going to step up next to us and encourage us. And if we fail in that regard, which we probably will, we need to step up to the plate next time. I mean, we strike out every once in a while, but the next time we'll take advantage of trying to be encouragers and not discouragers. I think that's a really important lesson from Nehemiah chapter 4 this week, that Nehemiah, as I'm trying to do this morning, it steps up and reminds the people that God is in control, that God is going to take care of them, and they need to just roll up their sleeves and keep working, right? Because we're going to accomplish whatever goals we want to accomplish with God on our side. So let's remember that this morning. Maybe you're struggling with something. We're going to have an invitation song. Jim's going to lead that for us. If there's something we can do to pray for you or encourage you in any way, please come. Let us know that so we can stand next to you.
Hear the holy roar of God resound. Watch the water.